One of the most controversial issues in management of colon cancer is adjuvant chemotherapy for stage 2 disease, and a major ECOG trial is now comparing FOLFOX to FOLFOX plus bevacizumab in patients considered at higher risk based on tumor microsatellite instability and loss of heterozygosity at chromosome 18q. The non-protocol approach to these patients is a surefire recipe for debate at any CME meeting, and at a recent symposium our group conducted with a Florida cancer specialist in Naples, Florida, we put Drs. Norman Walmark and Peter Ravden into the boxing ring, and the result was a pugilistic classic, beginning with Dr. Ravden's comments on the available research data addressing the controversial question of adjuvant therapy of stage 2 colon cancer.
There's still a debate, and I think a realistic debate, about whether or not all stage 2 colon cancer patients should be treated. The idea may be that there's less benefit proportionately in those patients who are node negative. What about the idea that we're building successfully on top of prior regimens? That's actually really true in breast cancer. In colon cancer, there's some suggestion with FOLFOX and FLOX that this is taking place. So what are the recommendations? The NCCN recommendations, certainly stage 2 patients in colon cancer, they're ambivalent. Now, for any level of risk in stage 2 disease in colon cancer, they actually would view as acceptable all three options. Really, there are two options: adjuvant chemotherapy or observation and or trial. And that's true for the low-risk T3N0 patients, the high-risk N0 T3 patatients, and the T4N0 patients. You can see that they really are making the same recommendations. Incidentally, they don't really view it as a generational thing where oxaliplatin is recommended. Chemotherapy options include both the leucovorin 5-FU, also other fluoropyrimidine things such as capecitabine, and the oxaliplatin regimens, with no bias suggesting one versus the other. And so what is the balance? Well, for stage 2 low-risk patients, you may be getting a 2% overall survival advantage from 5-FU at the cost of about 0.5% mortality. That's the mortality rate seen in trials. The additional benefit for FLOX or FOLFOX over 5-FU, you're adding less than 1% survival advantage, and you're doing that at the cost of neuropathy that's long-lasting in a significant percentage of patients. So in conclusion, what I would say is for 5-FU leucovorin, the benefit for adjuvant therapy in stage 2 disease seems to be less than in stage 3 disease. That's what, on a proportional sense, the actual meta-analyses suggest. Data about oxaliplatin regimens is remarkably thin. Two trials, of which there is only short follow-up in one of them, and survival benefit is uncertain, and it's likely that it's a smaller step than that step that we took when we started to implement 5-FU leucovorin regimens. The adjuvant treatment for stage 2 disease would seem logical, but whether or not the additional risks of using oxaliplatin regimens in this population is justified remains unclear.
Norm, do you agree with that?
Well, I think in general, Dr. Ravden gave an extraordinarily nihilistic overview of the incremental benefits that we've achieved over the last 15 years in the adjuvant therapy, not only of stage 2, but of stage 3 disease as well. I think that we waited a long time for the oxaliplatin incremental benefit. I mean, there was a decade of decadence that we, after the CO3 data, for example, where we did show a 10%, even at 10 years, a 10% absolute benefit in both disease-free survival and overall survival. So the oxaliplatin doesn't match it, but then again, it's additive. At 4 years, both the mosaic overall for stage 2 and 3, the mosaic is now showing an over 6% absolute disease-free survival advantage. The CO7, the FLOX data, is also showing an over 6% absolute advantage. I think it's too soon to start talking about survival because we're not seeing survival differences. We're underpowered relative to the number of events to examine survival at this point, although the deaths are heading in the right direction, and sorry for using that terminology. So I think that this is a significant incremental step forward. And to suggest that you really have to worry as to whether the benefits outweigh the toxicity, again, I think is a nihilistic perspective. Certainly, we ought to come to grips with that, each and every one of us, and our patients do as well. Relative to the stage two business, I think that there's enough data, not from meta-analyses and impact trials. I mean, we've had the QUASAR trial, which shows a survival advantage with FU-based therapy that's in the range of 3% for a Dukes B or stage 2 subset. We've also seen the CKVO trial, the Dutch trial, which also in and as of itself showed a survival advantage in the range of 2 to 3% for that. And I think that your data, your analyses, I think, were very interesting in that I think they provided a great deal of insight relative to the threshold to treat a stage 2 patient. You have a 3% survival advantage in breast cancer associated with a particular therapy, and if you withhold treatment, you're going to be held accountable for that. People will be outraged. On the other hand, for that same 3% difference in survival, for stage 2 colon cancer, you get a debate.
Peter?
What I'm saying about stage 2 disease is we're seeing less efficacy than in stage 3, and we're seeing additional toxicities when we try to take the step up to oxaliplatin-based regimens. But the data is less than convincing.
If we look at the MOSAIC data, which has a longer follow-up than CO7, I mean, the hazard rate for stage 2s, unselected for high risk or low risk, is about the same as it is for stage 3s. It's in the range of 0.8 or 0.76 to 0.8. And the absolute differences at 4 years are 3.8% absolute difference for stage 2 and 8.7% for stage 3. I think the hazard ratio is similar. Now, we don't have survival data as yet, and perhaps Peter's hypothesis will prove to be correct when we have sufficient follow-up to examine survival.
So are you a nihilist or not, Peter?
I'm a realist, not a nihilist. And that is that I think what we see is it is still open to question. There's a 25% proportional risk reduction in disease-free survival, which is the best endpoint, or you could argue the most forgiving endpoint for FOLFOX, for stage 3 disease. Now, for stage 2 disease, it is actually only 18%. With all the uncertainties involved, that could be half. The same kind of thing that we're seeing for 5-FU leucovorin-like regimens, in that they seem to be, and all the meta-analyses show this, about half as proportionally effective in stage 2 disease as stage 3 disease. And that if you apply that to survival, there's an uncertainty that that could get to be a pretty modest survival increment. And in fact, the survival increment is small. It's actually, right now, the survival increment in that trial is zero. We're not looking at the curves, but they absolutely overlay each other. So there's not even a hint of benefit in stage 2s. Now, this is all underpowered, but remember that there's been a major standard of care change on the basis of this trial, which does not show a survival benefit in these patients.
Can I just clarify? I had never heard somebody say the relative risk reduction in colon cancer was different in node positive and node negative. Norm, do you agree with that?
No.
Norm, why do you not feel that way?
In every NSABP trial where there has been a benefit, and we've included stage 2 and 3s, the relative risk of that benefit has been the same in Bs and Cs. If we look at the MOSAIC trial using DFS, and that's the only endpoint we can examine at this point, we see that the hazard rate is about the same. Even if we look at CO7, the formal test for interaction between nodes and the benefit of oxaliplatin is statistically not significant. So from a biologic standpoint, there is nothing to suggest that a stage 2 patient will behave any differently relative to their benefit from a given therapy than will a stage 3.
I'm curious to know what Norm thinks about the ECOG stage 2 trial that uses 18q deletion and MSI as an integral part of the algorithm of the study.
Are those markers really validated to justify that trial, and will we get any more information from that trial than we would from CO8, which utilize stage 2 patients, where we can do the various explorations for gene profiles associated with outcome relative to both oxaliplatin and bevacizumab. I think 25% of CO8 was node negative in a 2,700 patient trial, so we already have those stage twos that have been entered.
When you think you'll look at toxicity data?
Yeah, well, we're already looking at toxicity data. We don't disclose toxicity data unless there are unforeseen or untoward toxicities from CO8.
I mean, you already have bowel perforation data.
Yeah, when the AVANT trial went into hiatus, we really examined our own data and did not see anything that was unanticipated.
Bill?
I had a question to Norm. One is, I noticed that panitumumab, the FDA indication is again asking for the patients to be EGFR positive. So we have to be a little bit cautious on the reimbursements. I don't know why they did that again.
I don't either, because I really don't think it's justified. I think, again, it's a very tentative FDA trying to be extraordinarily careful without supportive data.
Do you find that insurance companies require that when you try to give Erbitux?
I haven't had that, but, you know, we're a little cautious when we get such an expensive new drug that the FDA indication says that. And if we don't do it, it certainly gives them a way that they might be able to reject it. It is a little bit of a problem. I really don't like to see the FDA doing that. I mean, Lenny Sauls has so much information that it's not necessary,
right.
And yet I'm amazed that they threw that in there.
All the data indicates that there is no interaction.
Pardon me, I don't really understand statistics all that well, but when you power CO8 to have a 25% reduction, who's to say if there was, say, a 15 to 20% reduction that might not be valuable, and how do you reconcile that?
It may very well be valuable, and hopefully we could squeeze that elusive p-value out of it if it were 15%, but we have to power the trial based on events. So we powered it for 25% reduction because we thought that was reasonable. It would also give us a reasonable trial as far as the number of patients required to address the endpoint. If we got 15% and it was statistically significant, which it may very well be with additional follow-up time, I think that would be appropriate as well. Whether the FDA would buy it is a separate issue.
Lastly, how are we going to sort out the duration of bevacizumab? I still see us being stuck not knowing whether it's necessary to continue it past the chemotherapy.
Right. Well, I think the trial that the intergroup has proposed in breast cancer is comparing 6 months of Bev to 12 months of Bev. It's a factorial trial, and we'll get some insight into that, I think, from that trial. So there is a trial that's going to be conducted with a bevacizumab duration.
Are you talking about breast?
Yeah.
Would you be able to apply breast to colon?
No, but if you saw in breast, for example, that 6 months was as good as 12, or if you saw that 12 was better than 6, I don't think people are going to, you know, mount with great hurrahs doing the same thing in colon. Moreover, although we think that C11, for example, is reasonable, in the current status of CTEP being, or at least behaving as if they're bankrupt, the likelihood of CTEP supporting that kind of a trial with the current review processes that are in place is remote. We still have an ongoing intergroup trial addressing cetuximab, which has now accrued between 800 and 900 patients, and it's been open for a while.
It seems like CTEP is sending out messages against doing these practical kinds of questions that clinicians have and trying to focus more on moving the field forward. For example, I remember when I first talked to you about CO8, it was about 3 years ago, and originally it was going to be 3x2. You had a capecitabine arm, and you
exactly.
had a flox arm, and you had a full
precisely.
And then CTEP said, okay, just find out about Bev.
To say, we really don't care what the template is because we think they're all the same. You have an oxali-based template. Whatever your bias or preference is, we'll accept it and we'll stratify. Actually, it was the FDA that came back and said, we strongly suggest you not submit it that way. So why FOLFOX 6? I mean, where did we pull that one? Out of some epithelial-lined organ, I would imagine. I mean, Emory de Grandma is using FOLFOX 4, and yet we collectively decided that FOLFOX 6 light is the appropriate standard for North America. And that's what we're using. So it's an imperfect world. I mean, you know, compromise is necessary to get clinical trials moving.
This concludes our program. Special thanks to our speakers, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for Colorectal Cancer Update.